Welcome to Spotcast. This is episode 49. My name is Tim Mitra, and I am in Toronto, Ontario. And I'm joined once again by Jonathan Kuhlein in Mr. Mississauga.
Hello there.
We're also joined by Jaime Lippis Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
All right. Well, it's been a while. We're back.
Yeah.
So we have a lot to cover today. I think there's a prime reason why we're here today.
Is it to talk about Raptors being the NBA champions?
Yeah, of course. That was exactly what I was thinking.
Let's go, yes. Raptors. Thank you very much.
All right. So let's start off with some fact checks. So we had one thing from the last episode, which was 49, which seems like a long time ago. We were talking about Westworld, and I was trying to remember the name of the actual star from the Westworld 1973 movie. It wasn't James Brolin. It was actually Richard Benjamin, who was in a ton of movies back then. And I don't know where he's gone, because we haven't seen him in a while.
I'd guess I'd say the grave, but I don't want to disrespect Mr. Benjamin. Perhaps he's still alive.
Yeah, but that's true, but he's of that age of you know, what's his name's father, married to Barbara Streisand.
James Brolin.
James Brolin, thank you, yes. Who got his start as Dr. Richard Kiley on Marcus Welby, MD, for those of you driving at home. All right, so you were saying something about the Raptors, Jonathan? I guess I'm looking at the show notes here.
Well, I'm going to put that every other note is going to be, by the way, the Toronto Raptors won.
Still the world's champions.
NBA
so
championship.
As a side note, I went and saw Do the Right Thing at TIFF the other day, and we went the second night, the night after Spike Lee was there doing a Q&A. But they replayed the Q&A, and he started out with, "You guys are the world champions." So if Spike Lee can give us the nod,
yes,
then I think we're within our rights to drive this point into the ground.
And in spite of the tragic events that have befallen the team since then, i.e. our best player deciding he'd prefer to go home and play in Los Angeles, which we don't begrudge him, but we are a little sad. We still have the parade. We still have the championship banner that's going to go up this fall, and nothing will ever take away the championship we won. So, thanks for that.
That's true. Yes, sir, Bob.
Indeed.
All right, so, Jaime, you have the first story here. Why don't you hit us with it?
Yeah, figured we just start front and center with this one because I knew you guys would like this one. So The Orville season 3 will not be on Fox, and no, it's not canceled. It has moved over to Hulu as a Hulu exclusive. Don't know what this means for areas of the world that don't get Hulu, and I think that means literally everywhere except the United States. I don't think there's any international Hulu. Mm-mm. So really unclear what's happening in terms of how do you continue to get your Orville fix for season 3? No idea. For me, I will be subscribing to Hulu, but I'm, I don't want to collect all the streaming services at once.
That was your mission.
Yeah, so I'm like, all right, well, there's, Handmaid's Tale, season 2 and 3 that I have to catch up on, and Jonathan's talking about Runaways, so I'm like, should I, I don't know how these episodes are going to be released. I just assume it's going to be week by week, the way that Discovery was done, so you kind of squeeze out more subscriber time, so I might wait until they're all out, and then just binge all of that Hulu content in 1 month. Hmm. So I'm bummed about that one. I sure enjoyed getting the show for free, but it is nice that they'll be able to spend a little bit more, according to this article, on special effects and other things. And it sounds like part of the reason for this moving was the fact that McFarlane was like, oh, by the way, you're not going to be able to have episodes ready until, late 2020. I said, what? Okay. Yeah. Maybe we can support that then. We can't wait that long, CBS All Access can wait because, you pay no matter what, but like for Discovery, and I don't really liken this as, being quite a juicy exclusive as Discovery was for CBS All Access. Clearly that helped launch that platform, and Hulu is already existing platform. It just adds to the armament that Hulu has in its battles against every other provider.
Well, we talked about it in a previous episode, the fact that they're produced by Fox Studios, which is now owned by Disney as part of the acquisition. And we were talking about, the show's done well by Fox, but the question is, will Fox want to keep airing shows that Disney actually owns the rights to now? I wonder how much sort of behind the scenes stuff, because for them, this is the kind of stuff they want on Hulu, because they now have the majority share in Hulu. They want people's mm-hmm. eyes on there, and they want to build up the traffic for it because they're going to put some of their own stuff. We talked about Ghost Rider and Hellstorm and some of the other stuff that they've got coming there. there as well, right?
Yeah, and I think this really is becoming true, what I'd said before of, oh, Disney will do this the same way they had the relationship between Disney Pictures and Miramax, where the family-friendly stuff comes through Disney, and the more risque stuff, you know, sex, violence, drugs, profanity, that sort of stuff, is going to tend towards Miramax, and in this case, Hulu is that equivalent party.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the momentum carries, because you're right, Jaime, the 2020 timeline's an interesting one. A lot of people, and I think maybe the three of us included, I don't want to speak for Tim, but I think the season got stronger as it went on in season two, and I think it got, you know, more interesting.
I think the last two episodes got stronger, the rest of it was crap.
And so, I do wonder about the momentum curve of that too, if they're talking about not coming back for a full year and a half now, that's a long break for a show that's still relatively, I mean, it's got some episodes behind it now, but it's still not quite entrenched in the zeitgeist like that.
It's a weird, it seems like it's a weird new reality for special effects heavy shows. Like, we talked about the big gap. I don't think it was quite as big, but certainly still a big gap for Discovery. It didn't come out like year after year at the same exact time. Even though it's a smaller set of episodes, you know, like 10 episodes, 10 to 13 episodes versus like old school TNG that was 25-ish episodes week after week. It just seems like it's a new world where if you like stuff that is not special effect laden, you can probably get those, you know, those seasons year after year. And for things that are, it's going to be a year and then sometimes a year and a half and maybe some other gap.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good luck to them. Hopefully it'll pay off. I am curious too, to your point, Jaime, what this means as far as the Canadian broadcast. We tend to get Hulu broadcast material spread to the four winds. So some of it airs on Space. Some of it airs on Showcase here in Canada. Some of it's on Crave directly, which is our one of our streaming services. So I have confidence that a show that's established like that will probably be able to find a home, but who knows what that will be.
Speaking of home wrecking.
and the Orville.
Yeah, sorry, I had to tag this one in here as a piggyback to Jaime's story. So the news was out this week that, I guess we don't think we've addressed this in the past. Adrian Palicki and Scott Grimes, who are two of the stars of the Orville, got married. They got engaged and they got married, having developed their relationship on the show. And it was kind of a strange one because, I guess their characters don't interact. It's hard to imagine them being together, but, you know, they seem to be getting together and they got married and now they're getting divorced. It's been 2 whole months and she has apparently decided that she's had enough and they are now getting a divorce. And I don't know how to feel about that because it was kind of weird that they got together and now it's weird that they've separated. And I wonder what that does for the chemistry on the set.
Hmm. I'm surprised that would even have an impact on the characters in the show, but you're right. It kind of wonders. It's an odd pairing if you were to look at it from the point of view of who's on the show and what role they play. So, but you know, people are people and they have different relationships and are different people off stage, off set, as it were, right?
It's true. But you know, I mean, there is an age discrepancy. I think that was the part that sort of caught me because Scott Grimes is, he's 48. She's only 36. So I thought, oh, okay, that's an unusual choice, but whatever, love is love. And you know, but it was funny that you know, the announcement sort of came that they had gotten together and then that they had gotten engaged and then they had gotten married and now 2 months later got a divorce. This is quite the whirlwind for these two. And there was obviously, we discussed it in a previous episode, there was a bit of a discussion whether Halston Sage, who was Alara, she was apparently, according to internet rumors, take that for what it's worth, was involved with Seth MacFarlane, and apparently that ended and then she is now off the show. I wonder if this has any potential to be that kind of impactful, you know, decisions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so now you have two people who are divorced and yet have to work together, and is getting weirdly meta for this show.
Yeah, yeah, it is, absolutely.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah.
That's a strange one. All right, let's move on to the next story here, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah, so, you know, I know I'm a huge fan, and I know you are, Tim, as well. I don't know about you, Jaime, but Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, an all-time classic, and it's sort of had some ups and downs as far as adaptations go. Famously a BBC radio show, a radio play, and then also they did a television program, which was extremely cheesy, but really, really funny. And then in 2005, they did a film adaptation starring Martin Freeman that was not terribly well received, but I think people were excited to see it nonetheless. I know Tim and I were there on opening night. There's a story that Hulu's next big push into creating adapted content is going to be an adaptation of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And the report is that Carlton Cuse and Jason Fuchs will be running it. So, you know, obviously Carlton Cuse worked on Lost, is, you know, very, very well-known television maker. Interesting that this is something that they're going to be after. There's not a lot of details yet. So far, there's, you know, it's pretty loose, just that's sort of the taste of it. But I wanted to get your impressions, guys. You know, I know I'm in for anything that they do in this universe. I don't think you could top it, because nobody's really taken it far enough. You know, we got the movie sort of only did kind of the first book. We've got the TV show that covered the first two books and maybe into the third, but we never really got the whole shebang. What do you guys think about the idea of this being a Hulu regular series?
I think for me, this will be very similar to the Doctor Who discussion, where I'm like, oh, that seems interesting. In this case, I actually have, unlike Doctor Who, where I'd seen nothing other than, you know, small clips here and there, I actually have seen the movie with Alan Rickman as the robot and stuff.
Yes, yes.
So I think I will watch this, particularly if it ends up aligning with the Hulu stars with me buying for the Orville. But I'm actually pretty interested in this. I think I'll give it a chance, just like the same way I did Doctor Who, of like, I'm aware of the cultural impact. I've not been a fan, not because I dislike it, but just because I never, you know, had an opportunity to get exposed and into it. So this might be my opportunity to jump in.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And in the sad news department.
Yeah. So we lost a sci-fi icon this week. Rutger Hauer died this week, age 75. Of course, you know, for sci-fi fans, playing Roy in Blade Runner, such an iconic role, and of course, one of the greatest sci-fi speeches of all time, his death scene at the end of that movie. Spoilers if you haven't seen this movie from the 1980s.
Seriously, yeah.
It's I think a lot of people sort of, you know, had not really thought about Rutger Hauer very much in the last, you know, little while. He was, you know, still working in, he was on True Blood, I guess, for a while, and he did Gallivant. He's obviously a very prolific actor, worked for a very long time from the 70s straight through till to the, you know, the last few years. But yeah, I mean, again, Lady Hawk, you know, his sci-fi fantasy bona fides are very, very strong. So yeah, it's kind of sad to see somebody like that gone. I saw people repeatedly quoting his famous speech at the end, which I did not realize, and maybe it's just because of my age, that he improvised some of that speech in at the end of the movie, which is, again, become this sort of iconic soliloquy in sci-fi. So yeah, sad to see him go.
Yeah, sad. And you're right, it's such a good monologue at the very end there, that I had a discussion with a friend, because we were talking about his passing. We're like, oh yeah, you know, because he was a good guy. I'm like, good guy, he was clearly the villain in the movie. It's just, he's not like a black and white villain, right? Like, he's like the freedom fighter for his people sort of thing. It's so compelling, you can understand his point, that he does such a good job of turning what could be, oh no, like, evil robot has gone wild and like, it's gonna kill us all. And it's like, well, no, I actually kind of see his point, and it's so poignant, his, you know, soliloquy there at the end, that you're like, oh my gosh, like, I feel like I've switched sides in alliances.
Well, in the end, it makes the movie a tragedy. You know, when you're sort of following along and it's just sort of a crime noir, and, you know, Deckard's got to stop these robots that are on the rampage, and, you know, the first few are very much just more sort of bloodthirsty, and so is Roy. Mm-hmm. And that scene is terrifying, where Roy is hunting him through the building and he breaks his hand, and but that scene, it humanizes him in a way that even the desire to stay alive, which he expresses through the entire movie, doesn't. isn't. The idea that he is haunted by his experiences and that his death is a loss for people is really powerful. Like, that's what I think what really makes the movie. It makes it, as much as the dynamic between between Deckard and the Sean Young character, his arc is really, really interesting, and to end that way really makes the movie much more poignant.
Yeah, it's funny too, but I think of the time, though, you know, now we share everything, right? And we try to share everything, and people, you know, are constantly posting their lives online. But at the time that story was written and the story was portrayed, a person's experience was their own unless they had another way of expressing it, you know, and sharing it. And I think that's what Roy was lamenting, was the fact that in his death, he'd seen things that none of us are going to experience ever, you know?
Yeah. I mean, again.
And, you know, he was another iconic actor. I mean, he was one of the Expendables in Expendables 2, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
He kept coming back as, you know, in different roles as a sort of tough guy. And it's surprising to hear a tough guy pass away, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that just doesn't happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it was like, you know, ever any indication that, you know, he was, you know, 75 years old is not young, but there's never any indication that there was anything wrong. I mean, like, you know, he'd been around, he was around, and now he's gone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, RIP, Mr. Howard, you were beloved, and you have left an indelible memory in a lot of us, so.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. In happier news, speaking of older men who are acting, we're going to get really into it in this episode. We're going to talk about some of the stuff that came out of San Diego Comic Con. There's lots and lots of interesting news for us to discuss. One of the things that came out there that I was just absolutely thrilled by was the fact that there was some information that started coming out about the CW's big superhero crossover Crisis on Infinite Earths that they've been touting since last fall. That is, of course, going to cover through, you know, Arrow and Flash and Supergirl and Legends of Tomorrow and Batgirl or Batwoman, excuse me, Batwoman, the new series. It was revealed that they are going to bring back and cross over with a whole bunch of other DC properties as part of this. They had mentioned that Tyler Hoechlin is going to come back as Superman. They also mentioned that Brandon Routh is going to be wearing his Superman costume from Man of Steel at one point. And they also mentioned that Burt Ward, who was Robin in the 1960s Batman series, is going to be appearing as... they didn't say he's appearing as Robin, but...
A really old Robin.
Well,
really?
But that's... So what I guess what they're going to say is that they're going to do scenes from characters from Infinite Earths. And on one Earth, that's the reality, is that, you know, Adam and Burt were Batman and Robin. It's a shame. It's a shame that Adam West couldn't have lived to be part of this. That would have just been a magical experience. But I'm really excited that Burt's getting this opportunity too, to come play in the sandbox. He's been such a good sport about, you know, playing that role all those years ago and how much, you know, he's engaged with the fans and stuff over the years. I'm excited. And there's more rumors that apparently they're going to do, they want to cross this over with the DCEU, the movie universe, and that they would like to do, if they can't actually get the actors on board, which they're not sure they're going to be able to, they want to be able to use clips from some of the movies to be able to flesh out that they exist in one of these timelines as well. So this is really, I'm absolutely piqued by this. I'm really interested to see how this all comes together now. And it sounds like it has the makings of being something really, really fun for comic book fans and even just, you know, longtime fans of all this stuff.
So there's hope for George Clooney just yet, eh?
Well, you know, I did see online today that, have you guys seen the trailer for the new Jay and Silent Bob movie, the Kevin Smith?
No, not yet.
Jay and Silent Bob reboot. He released the trailer at San Diego as well. He is doing, in the movie, the idea is that they're remaking Blunt Man and Chronic, but they're remaking it as Blunt Man v. Chronic. A la Batman v. Superman. And they hired Val Kilmer to play Blunt Man.
Oh, is that who was in the outfit on Twitter today?
Yes. Okay. So Val Kilmer, former Batman, is playing Blunt Man, and Melissa Benoist, from Supergirl is playing Chronic. So he's got Batman playing one character and Supergirl playing the other character. But yeah, I saw Val Kilmer today in that in the tricked out. He looks a little bit like the Ben Affleck Batman character in the last few movies, and it made me laugh because I was like, that's pretty funny stunt casting where you bring in that guy to play that part. But no word as to whether or not he's been invited or George Clooney's been invited to play in this sandbox too. But yeah, it's really cool. You guys excited about this one? Are you more excited now?
No.
That too.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to the Terminator here. We got a lot to cover.
All right.
Yeah. Definitely excited about this one. If you want to talk about that one, Jonathan.
So
let me ask a dumb question first of all.
Yeah.
Is Edward Furlong the first kid from the first movie?
Yes. Edward Furlong played John Connor in part two, Terminator two.
Oh, right. Yeah. Because he wasn't in Terminator one.
Yeah. Terminator one.
He was in Terminator one. He was a fetus. Technically.
He was a fetus. Yes. Edward Furlong is the first actor to play John Connor as a young man. He has apparently signed on to be on in Dark Fate, which is the new Terminator movie that's coming out. So we already knew Linda Hamilton and Arnold Schwarzenegger obviously were involved. I don't know how to feel about this one. So maybe I'll let you guys give me your thoughts as well. Edward Furlong had a bit of a rocky road post-Terminator. He had some troubles with the law. Spousal abuse was alleged at one point. I believe he was convicted of that. I don't want to disparage him here. I want to make sure I get my facts correct. But there has been a little bit of a backlash online about whether or not it was appropriate to go back to that well, given his
personal history.
Yes. Substance abuse issues and domestic violence issues apparently is the past issues.
Well, James Cameron did say he was going back to, or this is a reboot, not related to any of the other movies.
Yes.
Right?
So. Yeah. As far as he's concerned, this is Terminator 3 after his Terminator 2.
Right. Okay.
Terminator 3 again.
He's been hanging out with George Lucas too much. Yeah. Okay.
But I don't know. What do you guys think about A, the casting, and B, the casting given all those circumstances?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's odd. Like, yeah, given the circumstances, I do see the questioning of it, but like, why bring back this guy who's never, I mean, who's heard from him in the last 20 years, right? Not me, so.
Yeah, well, and I think that was the reason was, again, he had substance legal matters that were, I think, derailed his career.
Which fits with John Connor, but, you know, who knows? All right, let's move on.
All right, some quick ones. So, Doom Patrol renewed for season two. It's not only going to be on the DCU app in the United States, it's going to be available on HBO Max, which is the new, so that's HBO.
Pay us lots of money.
AT&T. Jaime, help me out here. It's HBO, AT&T. Who else is involved with that one? Warner.
I forget because Warner Brothers. HBO has Go, which if you have a normal cable subscription, you can use the Go app ostensibly for free because you're already paying for HBO via your cable provider.
Yeah.
But there's also HBO Now, which is what I use. No cable provider, just paid straight up to subscribe so I could watch Westworld Season 2 and Game of Thrones, the final season. Max is a very confusing addition to that. And you're right. It is through the AT&T and it adds a few different sources of stuff. I think that's why it's the Max. You get more than just HBO.
Yeah.
Maybe it comes with a separate stand that you have to buy for $1,000.
Yes. The aluminum cantilever stand for the HBO Max.
Okay. So I found the list here. Content for HBO Max includes, hold on to your socks here, programming from HBO, Warner Brothers, New Line, DC Entertainment, CNN, TNT, TBS, True TV, The CW, Turner Classic Movies, Cartoon Network, Adult Swim, Crunchyroll, Rooster Teeth, Looney Tunes, and Originals.
So it's basically Canadian TV.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's a lot there. I mean, as we talked about with Disney and they like own darn near everything, here's like another company that owns darn near everything for all those channels and properties you talked about.
Mm-hmm. So again, I know there were some people who were sort of saying, you know, it's interesting that they're doing these for the DCU app. They did Doom Patrol, they did Titans, they've done the Swamp Thing, sort of. It's been canceled already. And there's more coming for that app. Interesting that they're doing the sort of double distribution on this stuff, that you'll be able to get it two different ways. It's probably pretty smart, because I think that DCU app is pretty niche. Another quick one. Good Place, just catching everybody up since our last broadcast. Good Place.
I thought that was finished. That's what I'm confused about.
No, season three ended with a bit of a sort of reboot of what's going on.
Cliffhanger, yeah.
Okay. I'm not going to get too far into it because obviously spoilers. But it did sort of set the stage for a fourth season. And so they got the news that it had been renewed for the fourth season, but now we're getting the news that it is ending after its fourth season. And this is not to do with ratings or anything else, apparently. It's just to do with the fact that the storytelling, they feel like they've got enough to do 12 or 13 more episodes and that'll wrap up the story, and they don't want to drag it on, and they don't want it to be artificially padded. They just want it to end in a natural place. On one hand, obviously I'd like it to end in a satisfying way. On the other hand, I think it's one of the best television shows on the air right now, so I'm a little sad about that. But
isn't Kristen Bell also Veronica Mars?
She is, and an outstanding Veronica Mars she is. I binged the hell out of that last week and loved it. But yeah, I mean, you know, obviously the show is done really well. It's, you know, it's made stars of a few different people that are on it. It, you know, obviously Kristen didn't need much help, nor did Ted Danson, but, you know, we're now seeing, you know, Jamila Jamil and William Jackson Harper, and, you know, the rest of them are sort of, you know, rising stars now. So I guess for them, it's good. They can move on to other things, but yeah, it'll be bittersweet. That's such a great show. I hope it gives them a chance to finish the way they want to, and they're happy with it, but sad to see it go.
Yeah, a lot of twists and turns in that show for sure. Okay, what's next?
Two other cancellations. Another one's close to my heart. Sci-Fi in the United States has canceled Happy, and they've canceled Deadly Class, based on an Image comic. Quite good, quite well done. A little bit confusing why that one. I guess its ratings just didn't justify it. Happy, I'm absolutely heartbroken by it. That last season was, again, I don't know if you guys have gotten a chance to catch up, it was disgusting, and it was so far over the top, and I loved every second of it. It was the most audacious television show out there. The boundaries they pushed, how just over the top it was so good. It was too good to be on TV. It really was. But I'm devastated.
So are you referring to the unicorn getting his horn polished?
Yeah, well, that was a big portion of it, yes. it was just so crazy. I mean, Chris Maloney is just, again, he's such a great actor, and to see him just being so bizarre and slapstick and weird, and oh, it was just such a great show. I cannot tell you how happy that show made me. I'm absolutely saddened that this show is going off the air, but again, I got to the end of season two and thought that I can't believe they got away with season two. Like, I honestly felt like it wasn't going to get a season two. I can't believe they got one and that they went as far to the edge as they did on it. I didn't think it was going to get a season three, but to know that that's the reality, it's really tough.
Sure.
Before we skip ahead to the main part of San Diego Comic-Con, I will note that NBC Universal plans April 2020 to launch its own streaming service, which has no content that we know of other than The Office. So The Office is moving off of Netflix.
And Friends.
Oh, sorry, yes, and Friends. So both of those are moving off of Netflix and onto NBC Universal's streaming service. So
is that enough, just the two of those shows, you think?
Well, it's a good foundation.
Yeah. You know, clearly it was worth a fair chunk of money for Netflix to pay to keep it on there. So I think now you just need some sort of marquee sort of title, maybe Happy is a you know, marquee thing to bring over and have to launch that station or that streaming service.
Yeah, I mean, and also the catalog is strong. NBC Universal's catalog is strong. Even if they just focus on their existing stuff, it'll be a strong performer. It's a matter then of what else are they doing for us, right?
Yeah. So the big trailer came out last week. We've been talking about Picard for a while, right? We had San Diego Comic-Con. Lots of stuff came out of it, which is why we came out of hiding to cover this. So why don't you lead in there, Jonathan?
Yeah. Jaime. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Jaime, do you want to take that?
No, I think I'll fill in the color commentary here. You wanted to give us the play-by-play.
Right.
So, we got our first full look at Picard. Picard, we had seen a teaser trailer before that really just sort of gave us a little soupçon, not enough. This one, we really get into the meat of it, and we get, so much stuff to talk about, so much stuff to break down. Again, I don't know how many times you guys have watched this trailer, but for me, it's been several. The fact that they, you know, they start actually sort of filling out the backstory of what we're going to see, you know, where Picard is. We knew that he was on his family's vineyard, which, we've seen in past episodes of TNG, and most notably at the Next Generation's finale, we show old man Picard retired on the vineyard.
Yeah, so that finale takes place well after this. This is sort of prequelish to that, right?
Yeah. So the idea would be that, you know, that future has come to pass in that he has retired from Starfleet and he's there, working there. But then, of course, as these things happen, something drags him back. And in the trailer, we see that it's this, you know, young woman shows up and sort of says, "I need you, help me." And Picard has to go off.
Does she have metal tongs that come out of her wrists as well? Or
yeah, we'll see. It'll be interesting to see how all that plays out. But basically, the crisis, you know, that something comes up, he decides he's got to go and sort of follow this up, and he heads off on this adventure. And this trailer sort of shows us these little tastes of you know, what's there. We get a glimpse of a drawer full of data parts. That, obviously, we know it's not Data. Data's dead. Data died sacrificing himself at the end of the last TNG movie in Nemesis, but we know that also B4 was the robot that was the pre-Data model that had actually downloaded Data's mind, so that could be Data. And later, of course, in the trailer, it culminates with seeing an actual, what looks an awful lot like Data talking.
So what happened to Lore?
Well, so I guess that's the question: is could that be B4? Could that be Lore? Could that be a new, you know, what's his name? Robot or android. Yeah, it could be anything. It seems to me like that little clip of him, it looks like he's playing cards with Picard.
Yeah.
My take on that was, I think maybe that's a dream.
Or a memory, yeah.
Or a memory. But yeah, lots of little tastes here. You know, we see some new characters. We see some of the actors who are going to be sort of the supporting roles. You know, we saw, you know, Peyton List. We see, you know, Alison Pill. You know, lots of little sort of tastes of going on. The big reveal at one point is we see the giant Borg cube that looks like it's been kind of smashed up. And then we get Jeri Ryan as maybe Seven of Nine, or maybe as Annika Hansen.
Who?
That's her name, Annika.
Oh. Her pre-Borg name when she was a little kid before she got assimilated.
She was a child when she was that person.
She was.
Well, it is Seven of Nine because you can see the she's got the thing over her left eye. Right?
Well, she does, but she's not wearing her cat suit, and she's sort of looks like she's dressed.
That was kind of sexist, really.
Well, it was certainly, but then they did come up with a reason in the show why she was supposed to be wearing that outfit. But
and what was that reason?
Well, it was supposed to be good for her biology because the doctor asked her to wear it for some medical reason. I can't remember what they said.
What? Okay.
Yeah, there was in fact some medical reason. They
had to make up an excuse why they had her in a skin tight catsuit for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And not a Star Trek uniform. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it looks like this, you know, it's an absolutely tantalizing trailer. It shows obviously those two familiar faces are the things that really catch your eye. You see Data and you see Seven of Nine. You see the Borg. Obviously, there's a big mystery. And I guess that the punch at the end of it is that it says it's coming in early 2020. So we thought maybe we would see it before the end of this year. It sounds like we're going to see it, early 2020. What was your impressions? What do you think?
Looks good. Can't wait.
Yeah.
Not sure about Amazon Prime, but there you go. That's the thing.
Amazon Prime. I was like, what? Oh, that's right. Everybody except the United States gets as part of Amazon Video. I get to enjoy CBS All Access once again. And
we have that here in Canada, but we haven't got much details on it, right? So,
well, and in Canada, Space Channel is still going to be airing this.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay, then I'm happier. Much happier.
Yes. It will still be on Space. It'll still be on Crave here in Canada. They announced that deal a little while back.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On a previous episode of Spotcast, if I'm not mistaken.
Absolutely.
And the other thing that's sort of related to this is the expanded Short Treks schedule.
Well, before you get into that, we have some Picard follow up-y kind of stuff to do.
Oh yeah, let's go for that.
Before I complain mightily about CBS Picard Office. Spoiler from Twitter on here.
I thought that was you.
Is that me? Oh really? Well, maybe it was
I
me.
Put my
yes.
name on stuff.
Okay, yeah, that was me. Okay, yeah. I found two of these things on Twitter. So yeah, this is a tweet that somebody had sort of made the connections between Alice. What's her name? Who plays the Queen?
Krieg. Alice Krieg.
Alice Krieg. Yeah, and I'm not sure why they made this connection, but you know, it's kind of possibly a connection between the Borg, Picard, and you know, this human that shows up or humanoid that shows up. Everybody's a humanoid in Star Trek, so you can't really tell what they are until they show us their vital organs or something. But yeah, so this is a bit of a spoiler. So I don't know what you guys think about this tweet or if you looked at it or not. Right, these are lines from the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Spoilers if you haven't seen the trailer yet. But interesting idea.
There are, as far as I can tell, on the interwebs, there are three distinct camps, and the two primary camps are she is some timey-wimey version of the Borg Queen before she becomes the Borg Queen. That's why she might be the destroyer of all. There's another pretty popular camp that says, no. You see all that stuff about Data and Picard? Maybe she's Lal or some sort of Lal-esque Sung droid, android. And then there is the other side that says, no. What she is related to the Borg, but she's Picard's daughter from the presumed DNA material they extracted out of him when they assimilated him.
Ooh, that's a good unclear one. That's a good one.
Yeah, I'm unclear how that one. That one's like way less popular. That one is the the also ran to the primary two top finishers, right, between Lal and Borg Queen. So who knows? I could see evidence in the trailers for either one.
Yes, it's further down. Somebody put up that he's got a picture of Deanna Troi and Riker. So
we think it's their child.
What would be the controversy about that? I wonder. I don't know.
I don't know if it's the controversy so much as it's the intrigue.
I guess. Yeah, that's kind of a. A low volley. It's not very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
But so Ricky Modello, he works for Apple, and he's kind of a geeky guy that we all kind of follow. Did a couple of talks at WWDC and that kind of stuff. But he has got too much time on his hands because he went and took apart the trailer, and he thought to himself, I wonder if. And if you look at the tweet that he's got here, he's got the appearance of Jerry Ryan in the trailer, but he's also got the math behind the audio appearance of Jerry Ryan and the visual appearance of Jerry Ryan. And if you take those two things and you average them out over the length of the movie or length of the trailer, she appears at exactly 7/9 of the trailer.
I don't doubt it that they would throw in something like that. It seems weirdly close. Like how do you even know what 7/9 is? If you were to just do that, nobody knows what that number is off the top of her head.
Well, it's 0.7. Oh, it's around 0.77 about 0.77, according to his math. If we have to trust his math, right? So
I feel like that is the world of coincidence that people are trying to see patterns in. But good on you, Ricky, for trying. That seems
the average of the voice.
I can't even imagine to what purpose would that be? Like what?
But 7/9. Come on.
I think this is like the Paul is dead sort of stuff that they could throw in there, keep the fans intrigued.
I guess I'm more intrigued with Ricky than I am with Ricky and his theories now than I am with the idea that's a trailer.
Yeah. Well, come on, it's the power of math, people. Sorry, I stole that from a tweet just below here. Everything I learned from Twitter. Yep. All right. Sorry, Jaime. I cut you off there on the Short Treks trailer part.
No, I didn't realize I was not paying close enough attention to what was after the Picard stuff. Right. And that is, I was complaining.
The video is unavailable in my country. Just want to point that out.
Oh, for the trailer? Really? Yeah, it's only available in the United States, unless, of course, you happen to subscribe to some sort of VPN service.
That is dumb. It's literally a commercial for stuff that they want you to see.
Yeah, they don't want anybody but the Americans to see it, though. Right? Yes. That's the point.
Yes.
Canadians aren't allowed to enjoy this.
It would explain why there's a fair number of people who are like, who the heck is this character? Way deep into season two of Discovery. It's like, oh, did you not see that? Those Short Treks, those actually are pretty important. We thought they might be, throwaway things that, whatever. They're just trying to get an extra buck out of me and I've got to subscribe, 1 month at a time to see 15 minutes of content. No, it actually was important. But they are doubling down, 50% more down, I should say. Instead of 4 short treks, there will be 6 short treks. Ask Not, Children of Mars, The Girl Who Made the Stars, Trouble with Edward, Ephaim and Dot, or Ephaim and Dot, and Q&A. So, yeah, all sorts of stuff. We've seen Number One and Spock seem to be, I presume, the Q&A one, where they seem to be trapped in the turbo lift and talking about stuff. And I have to look at the video, and I totally forgot what the other things were that we saw. Was that all we saw? Something with tribbles?
Yeah, they showed a tribbly focused one. They did say that of the 6, that 4 of them, I think, were going to be animated. And they didn't show any of that in the trailer, which is interesting.
Yeah, if you want to see more of Ansem Mount as Pike, I'm sure he's in there for at least 30 seconds.
I do. Like, I really,
hey,
really
I'll see you guys on deck 2. Okay, cool.
I would like to see, I don't know, say like a 5-year mission with him, please.
Which was discussed. It was teased.
Yeah.
Yeah, but did he actually have a 5-year mission? I mean, how long before he ended up on the planet with Vina and all that?
Well, theoretically,
the warp core accident that caused his problem, right?
If they're still like 10 years pre original series, there's enough of a window there to tell that story.
Interesting. Maybe he'll bring him back as an old man at his family's vineyard eventually.
That's right. Just reeling around with his lights blinking.
Bleep. Yep. Too soon.
Yeah.
All right. What's next?
Star
Trek Discovery 3, season 3.
Yeah. So the one note that I tagged
Winter
in here
is coming.
That all of this content, including they did a little breakdown for Star Trek Lower Decks, which is something that I know Jaime has been keeping us abreast of in the last little while. They sort of gave us some character outlines and a little bit more of the sort of plot of that as well. But yeah, Discovery Season 3, Picard, and Lower Decks are all listed right now as coming to CBS All Access in 2020. So we're not getting any more Trek this year, kids, which is, I guess, okay. Although I think all of us had our hopes on that when Discovery ended, was that March? That we thought, or April, I guess. I think we all hoped that it would, we'd see something else this year, whether it was Picard or they were talking about doing the Captain Georgiou, you know, section, what's it called? Section 31 storyline. I think we're all hoping we would see more Trek this year, and it sounds like we might be getting those short Treks, because those aren't listed as 2020. Those are listed as coming soonish, so maybe that'll be our last little taste. But it feels like Star Trek is booming again with all these different projects going, but it's a shame we have to wait a little while. So
actually, there was a picture posted by Jonathan Frakes of the QEW driving towards the CN Tower the other day.
Well, he directed an episode in season 2, and they're back, because I saw the actor who plays Saru was posted a picture the other day, Doug Jones, of him shaving his head, and he said, time to put the makeup back on. So they're back in town. Right. That was, I think, maybe 2 days ago. He posted with him bicking his head because he has to climb into the Saru makeup again. So
nice. All right.
Yep. So a point of clarification, because I heard the guys on the Greatest Discovery podcast get confused about this. So there are 2 animated series coming. One, Lower Decks, is the more Rick and Morty, more adult-esque sort of humor show. But there is also, I want to say it's coming to Nickelodeon. There's like a kids show.
Oh, yeah, they did mention that.
Did they talk about that?
But they didn't talk about it at San Diego, did they?
I didn't see. I was asking you because I didn't think I saw any news about
that. Yeah, I didn't see anything. And again, I didn't watch all of the Q&As they did and everything, but I did not hear any details about that one at all. I think that one's probably further back in development. I don't think it's ready to go. So the other bit we got in San Diego was a huge dump of Marvel news. Marvel announced all of its Phase 4 movies. I think we kind of knew what was coming, but now we have official titles for everything. We also got the full slate of release dates for those, and we got the full slate of release dates for all the new TV shows for Disney Plus. And they also told us what they're going to have in Phase 5, but they didn't actually put any dates to it. So this is pretty cool. So we're looking at May 1st, 2020 for Black Widow. That's Phase 4, Movie 1. We're looking at November 2020 for The Eternals. February 2021 for Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. May 2021 for Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, which may be the greatest movie title I've ever heard. November 2021 for Thor, Love, and Thunder. So that's Thor 4 for those scoring at home. And then their TV shows, they announced Fall 2020 for Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Spring 2021 for WandaVision, which is the Scarlet Witch and possibly Vision, Spring 2021 for Loki, Summer 2021 for What If, which is their animated What If comic book adaptation, and then Fall 2021 for Hawkeye. And then we jump into Marvel Phase 5, which is 2022 and 2023. They announced that they're going to do Black Panther 2, Guardians of the Galaxy 3, Captain Marvel 2, Fantastic Four, Blade, yes, Blade, and X-Men. So this is a really, really huge amount of Marvel content over the next 4 years. I'm kind of staggered by all this. I'm intrigued, absolutely. But I mean, what's your takeaway from all this, guys? This is a huge announcement of stuff.
It's a ton. Let's see if I can gather my thoughts roughly in the order there. So Black Widow, presumably a prequel, just spoilers for stuff. The Eternals, I had it as a link somewhere. Oh, it's like immediately down below. Yep. Salma Hayek will be the first Mexicana superhero. I'm not familiar with Eternals. Apparently Ajax, which looks like a dude here. So I guess they're changing the gender here to make Salma Hayek on there. So that's cool. That's definitely going to get a watch from me. Oops, I closed the thing. Shang-Chi. So one, my understanding is he is a proud or perhaps secret Canadian. I'm not sure.
No, proud Canadian.
Very, very proud Canadian.
CBU.
And it sounds like he sort of talked his way into getting the role, I guess. He's like, hey, what about me? Yeah, okay, come star in a movie. Cool.
Yeah.
I mean, he was on a few shows last year talking about how cool it would be to be in the Marvel Universe. And he was on Q Radio the other day. They replayed a bit talking about all the Orientals that are being represented in various pieces. And yeah, this is like same Salma Hayek. I don't mean to take away from her being the first Mexicana or Latina. No, I guess star. He'll be the first Oriental star. He's Korean, actually.
Asian. Yeah. Asian, I think, is what we're going to. Asian.
Well, is it? Yeah. He's basically star of one of the stars of Kim's Convenience.
Yeah, very popular CBC show. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Let's see. Then we got Doctor Strange. You know, more good stuff. Definitely. I don't have a ton there because I don't know a ton that's going on there. Thor, Love and Thunder. A lot of stuff going on here. So one, the live action Akira movie is apparently on hold because Taika Waititi is saying, I'm going to go do this other movie first. I enjoyed my time on Ragnarok. And apparently the triumphant return, like actual return of Natalie Portman as the presumed, taking up the hammer, which I guess doesn't exist, but sort of exists. I'm not sure. I'm sure there will be a new magic thing that turns her into, Thor, very similar to what ended up happening in the comic books last few years.
Yeah, so fill me in there, guys, because I mean, I know I've seen, comic books go by, my view of Thor as a female, but so what's the deal there?
So in the comic books, Jane Foster is a character just like she is in the movies. She had a relationship with Thor, and in the comic books, she was diagnosed with cancer and was terminal. And in the storyline that they had, Thor was sort of going through an existential crisis and sort of buggered off into space, and she ended up coming in possession of the hammer, and when she picked it up, she was worthy and became Thor. And so she was Thor for quite a long time over the past few years in the Marvel Comics universe. And a very interesting and compelling, well-written character is this very, very popular storyline that that weaved through for several years. And so they've decided that the time is now right as they're looking to diversify the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and good on them for doing that. As we're starting to sort of see, a little more progression, and they wanted to come back strong. So they were able to pitch her that, hey, come back into this universe again, and you're not just going to be, the damsel in distress, you're going to be a hero. And so that's a pretty interesting way to bring it all back around.
Right, cool.
I'm kind of interested in the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. It seems like an interesting pairing, but I'm a little surprised that it's not Captain America and the Winter Soldier. I kind of assumed that the Falcon had, taken on the mantle, similar to how he had done in the comics.
Well, I think that's going to be the theme of the piece, too. I get the impression that it's about, heavy what is it? Heavy wears the crown, or heavy hangs the head that wears the crown. Like, I think it's the idea of these two men who are so close to Steve Rogers, who are both potentially could have been Captain America. The idea of them sort of having to deal with a world without Cap. I think this could be a really, really interesting character development series if it's done right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. WandaVision, I don't know a ton, so I can't comment. Loki, I mean, I think, you know, we love the character.
Spoilers, what I thought if, he was dead.
Well, except that he's not, if spoilers for Endgame.
Oh. Could be like a trickster, could be, you know, a prequel. I mean, there's like lots of different things. But speaking of lots of different things, I think the what if is the really fun one, because those are cool comics where it's like, oh, you know, what if, like, you know, what if Spider-Man got the Infinity Gauntlet? Okay, cool. What if, you know, Gwen Stacy never died? Or what if, you know, the Thing was the head of the X-Men? You know, that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot. There's so much material you can get into with that kind of thing. It's going to be fun to see what they decide to tackle with that one.
Yeah. Hawkeye, cool. Black Panther, definitely want to see more. What's going on in Wakanda. Mm-hmm. Asgardians of the Galaxy, it seems like it might be a fun one.
That's a long time to wait for those two, that movie, though, right?
It's a shocking one. Not to interrupt you, Jaime, but that was the one that really caught me. Black Panther was a steaming train of a juggernaut at the film, at the box office. I can't believe that they're going to wait till 2022 or 2023. That's 4 years to come back strong again. Now, again, I get that they want to do it right, and Ryan Coogler's schedule and you know, all those actors and everything else. But wow, 4 years.
It's challenging. I think another challenge is Captain Marvel, too, because her character is kind of OP, a little overpowered. So just like Superman, who is kind of difficult to write for, I think having a little bit more time for them to write out, like, okay, what's the next level of what she has to deal with? The next three definitely catch my eye, right? So Fantastic Four, we've seen multiple iterations. This might be the one that actually cracks through and becomes one that people love. Mm-hmm. And Blade is interesting because Mahershala Ali is going to be Blade.
I was going to say, is that like long enough for the statute of limitations on Wesley Snipes' tax problems or what?
right. And it's going to be presumably a very different kind of Blade, because Wesley Snipes was jacked and he was like, you know, black belt of some sort. I don't know, kung fu or karate or something. Mm-hmm. And you know, very sort of, you know, physically imposing one. So I kind of wonder how this might work. Maybe as a more sort of a suave and intellectual kind of Blade. And then, of course, the X-Men, who, despite the very confusing weirdness, like the most recent, you know, Dark Phoenix movie, seem like they are making their way into the main MCU universe now that everything has been combined with Disney and Fox.
Yeah, yeah. I can't believe they're going back to Blade already. I mean, you can look back, and people talk a lot about how the X-Men movie really was the sort of thing that jump-started the comic book box office bonanza. But the truth is, it was Blade. Blade was the first one that was really, really true to the character, but was its own story, and really started to blaze a path for, we can take these stories and do really interesting things with them on the big screen. And, you know, yeah, they don't hold up quite as well 20 years later, but those movies, they really, really, I think, opened some eyes in Hollywood as to what the potential of tapping into things like the Marvel and DC universe is really in depth, not just a, let's put out a Batman movie over a couple of years, but let's start getting into these other characters that are on the bench. I think it's really bold that they're doing this. I think the fact that they've got this incredibly talented actor in Mahershala Ali to play this role, you know, apparently the story that came out of San Diego was that he basically said, you know, hey, I'd like to play Blade. And Kevin Feige, who's of course the brains behind this whole Marvel Cinematic Universe, was like, we were going to call you and ask you to do the same thing. So it seems like a match made in heaven. He wanted to be this. They wanted him to be this. They see the time is right to revive this character and bring him into the Marvel Cinematic Universe properly. I think this is really exciting stuff.
Yeah, cool.
Just a couple other things that came out of this. So I tagged it. Obviously, we talked about you know, Shang-Chi and the Canadian connection there. Yeah, Valkyrie. So we had talked about this in our previous episode, that there was discussion they were going to have an LGBTQ+ character in the Marvel Universe, a prominent character. We speculated a little bit as to who might be a good candidate, and now we know that Valkyrie is going to be the first primary character in the Marvel Cinematic Universe to be LGBTQ+. They haven't really talked much about how that's going to come to play, but it is going to be in Thor, Love and Thunder. And I think, yeah, again, just like so many of these other things we talked about, Shang-Chi, we talked about the Eternals, we talked about, the female-led movies, we've gotten Captain Marvel now, we're going to get a Black Widow. It seems like there's a push towards, a more acceptable amount of diversity in the characters that they're portraying, and this is another good step forward for them. I will nitpick a little bit and say that maybe they could have aimed a little higher with the prominence of the characters. She's been in a couple of movies, and again, she's an amazing actress, and I love her to death, but I do think that it's not like it was Black Widow or Captain Marvel or any of the headliners that got that that as well. So
true. It starts somewhere, and they're weirdly behind DC in this, because we've had Black Lightning with the daughter character, I forget her name, and the upcoming Batwoman series.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it has to start somewhere. These are not, admittedly, the headliners like the Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman sort of level, or the Tony Stark, Captain America, Black Widow level. But it's good to see progress.
Yeah.
And continued progress, I think, will be good.
Yep. And that was something that, again, that when you look at the totality of everything they announced, all the Phase 4, the Phase 5, the TV shows, and if you sort of step back and look at it all, it is starting to be a little bit more noticeable that they're making an effort. And I guess that's how it has to start, right? Start making more of an effort, start paying more attention, start, more diversity hires, start hiring more women to direct movies, start hiring more actresses and putting them in lead roles, start hiring people of, different skin colors, start hiring people with different backgrounds, start hiring people and portraying people with different lifestyles. Like, that's how it's got to start. So good for them for starting. And hopefully this is a trend that continues.
So should we get into the Trailer-rama?
Trailer-rama. My
trailer
goodness.
Trailer-o-rama.
We got a dump of trailers coming out of San Diego. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to watch all of these trailers. So we got a Westworld Season 3 trailer. We got a Watchmen full trailer for the new HBO series that's coming up. We got a Preacher Season 4 trailer. We found out Season 4 will be the final season of Preacher, which is, again, very disappointing from my perspective, because that story should have taken 10 years to tell, and it's only going to take 4, and I can't imagine it ending in a satisfying way. But Snowpiercer TV show trailer. We got a trailer for The Witcher, which is the Netflix adaptation of the books / video games. And then, wow, we got the trailer for the new Cats movie based on the stage play of the same name, which we will save that discussion for last, because that is just delightful. From my perspective, the ones that really stood out, Westworld was a head scratcher. Watchmen was a head scratcher. Preacher looks awesome and disgusting, and I hope that they just throw, just like they did with Happy Season 2, I hope they throw it all up against the wall, because they know they're going off the air. I did not want to care at all about the Snowpiercer trailer or the show, mm-hmm. because I loved the movie, and I thought, how do you turn that into a show? But they've got Jennifer Connelly and a great cast, and it looks really good.
Is it going to be like the Star Lost on a train or what?
Yeah, it honestly feels like it could actually be a story that carries well for a longer period of time. So I'm surprisingly invested now. I watched the Witcher trailer twice, and I still have no idea what's happening in there. It just makes no sense to me at all, and I don't care if Henry Cavill's in it. I don't think I'm interested yet. And wow, that Cats trailer. Well, we'll come back to that one. What did you guys take away from all this?
Yeah, I was also confused on Westworld Season 3. They all kind of start out confusing, so we'll see what the conceit is for this season in terms of like how they're going to play it. I mean, the first one was sort of a mystery of like what's going on. Second one is more like flashbacks and then coming back to normal time. Going on to Watchmen. Watchmen is one of those borderline shows. Like I kind of feel like I want to watch it, but I'm not sure that I'm going to subscribe to HBO or Max specifically for that. So I might need it to tag along with like Westworld or final season of Silicon Valley or something of that nature. Mm. Snowpiercer, I was also kind of pleasantly surprised. Oh, by the way, that one starred Chris Evans
mm-hmm.
in the movie.
Yeah,
so
I still haven't made it all the way through that movie yet. So I've got it set up on the PVR. I was going to watch the rest of it in the next couple of days, but I've never actually made it all the way through.
Oh, it's so good! I love that movie. It's so weird. It's so weird, but it's so good.
It's like Star Lost on a train.
Yeah.
Of course, Jaime has no idea what Star Star Lost is. And neither do you, maybe.
I do not know.
I know Lost. Of Star Lost. I have not watched Star Lost.
Yeah, okay.
The Witcher, it took me an embarrassing amount of time to realize that was Superman. I was just watching. I was like, why is this dude looking? Oh, that's right. It's Henry Cavill. That's who it is. No mustache. That's why I couldn't tell.
That's right.
And then the Cats trailer, there's a really good comment here in the YouTube comments, which is pretty rare, but somebody says, this is what the people saw in Bird Box right before they died.
Yep, that's pretty bang on.
It's weird. I want to see the behind the scenes because it has to be people covered in like full body green suits with just their face coming out.
Yeah,
that's the only way I could see this working.
Oh, do you think they don't think they're actual costumes like they were the last one?
I don't think so. It looks like a big pile of CGI poop.
Okay,
with tons of like people you would know, you know, like Taylor Swift and Jennifer Hudson,
Idris Elba. Oh my God, dude, run away!
Oh, hey, speaking of Idris Elba, have you heard that the next Bond might be a woman?
Well, there is a new 007 who's going to be a woman.
Sorry, yeah, new 007.
Yes.
Whether it may be Jane Bond or something like that. But
well, no. So apparently they announced a little bit of a teaser for the new Bond movie and that it's going to be James Bond has retired from active duty. And so they've reassigned his 007 honorific to a woman be 007. But of course, James Bond will have to be returning, and whether or not he retakes his 007 is a different matter.
The operative question is, has anybody told Idris Elba yet?
Yeah, well, yeah.
That's what I understand the fan support. I had my doubts just given Idris Elba's age as to whether you could build a 2 or 3, 4 movie franchise out of that, because like a big reason for moving off of Daniel Craig is like the dude's getting older, right? It eventually happens. So yeah, I definitely understood the fan interest, but I was like, I don't know how this practically works when you're going to have like a decade of this person's life doing these movies.
Yep.
Right. So, you know, you guys know I haven't watched any or most of The Office. I've just caught the odd show here and there, but I didn't know that Idris Elba was in The Office.
That's right. He was like another manager or director or something, wasn't he? Yeah. That's right.
And they moved his name into a closet or something like that, right?
Yeah. There's a lot of connections there. You get the James Wood? Yes. I think it's James Wood or James Spader. I got to Google.
Oh, yeah. I think it was James Spader, wasn't it? James Spader was in it?
Yeah. Ultron is in there.
Yes.
That dude.
Yeah, it's James Spader, yeah. For what it's worth, also, the actress who's going to play the 007, not to fall too far down this rabbit hole, is Lashana Lynch, and she is also black. So that's something as a...
Of color, I believe you would say.
Start moving forward. Well, she's British, and I do not know what her heritage is, so I was going to use a more rounded term like black. But
okay. All right. Yeah, and I guess maybe as an aside, as we're talking about some of the progress and things, so in the interim, in our mini sabbatical here, we have seen Aladdin go and make tons of bucks. I think The Lion King is actually doing pretty good, making tons of bucks.
The voices or the mouth movements are weird.
But yeah, it's still making money though.
Yeah, apparently that didn't impact, you know, parents and children's enjoyment while they're eating popcorn.
I did hear a review of it the other day by somebody who said it was like 2 hours of parents taking their kids to the bathroom.
That sounds about right.
And along the Disney's remaking all the classic stuff out of their archives, Mulan, we saw a trailer for that,
which
seems like it's not a retelling of the Disney movie, but seems like it's the Netflix Marco Polo version of Mulan. You know, somewhat more realistic, somewhat more grounded in combat. And the announcement of the casting for Ariel and the Little Mermaid. The internet furor, pun accidentally unintended, that people were very upset, but she too is black of some sort of thing. Yes. I don't know if she's American, so I don't know if she's African American.
Who's the actress?
Her name is, I think, Halle Berry. I think it's not Halle Berry. Okay. It's Halle Berry. I will double check that, but I remember her name being, I remember thinking, wow, that's really close to the very famous actress's name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And has resulted in Brooklyn Nine-Nines or America's Got Talent host Terry Crews saying, hey, maybe I could be King Triton. Did you see how jacked I am and how appropriate I am for that role?
Apparently the singer Lizzo wanted to play Ursula as well and has been campaigning for that, which I don't think that's a bad fit either.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So,
all right.
could be interesting if they go down this pathway. Yeah. Oh, it's Halle, okay. Halle Bailey. Halle Bailey.
Halle Bailey, as opposed to Halle Berry.
Yes, Halle Bailey. Is this?
Your... That's rough. That's like being Michael B. Jordan. Real like.
Yeah.
What?
Dang it! Why did there have to be this mega star with my almost same name?
Yeah. Yeah.
Halle Bailey.
Poor guy.
Yeah. Tim, did you have any takeaways on any of these trailers?
No. Watchmen is just weird. Watchmen has always sort of been a weird fit. Like, it's kind of grown on me over the years. But yeah, it was completely different from a story point of view from anything DC or Marvel sort of threw at us. I can't even remember who Watchmen came out from initially, but
it was DC. It was DC in 1986.
Yeah, but it was an interesting sort of, hey, this is a whole completely different, you know, universe where, mm-hmm. you know, superheroes are not necessarily the great guys kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. But it's odd with the sort of, what's the name of the character with the face that keeps moving around?
Rorschach.
Rorschach, mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's sort of these Rorschach type clones, you know, I don't know, I'm not sure, the trailer doesn't give much away, but it just seems kind of weird.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see how it fits into the grand scheme of that universe. Mm-hmm. It looks stylish, and the acting list that's on there is very impressive, but I just don't know what to make of it.
Yeah, and you know, Westworld, I'm not sure, you know, Aaron Paul, bring him back. That, I mean, the whole idea behind Westworld is the Westworld is just one of many worlds. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, I kind of see that, okay, they moved into another part of the you know, Wonderland or whatever, wherever they are. Right. So, mm-hmm. So let's look at what's on your watch lists.
All right. So, well, I'll start off the watch list. The one thing that I'm looking forward to, which I imagine we probably won't have another episode before then. So, iZombie, the series is wrapping up on August the 1st. It'll be the end of the fifth season, and that's the end of the whole run. I'm glad they got this way to sort of wrap up the storyline. I was a big fan of the series, really, really enjoyed it. I think I really love the chemistry of the actors. You know, it sort of fell into being a little bit procedurally, you know, it was just a little sort of, you know, lighthearted police procedural, with a little bit of sort of the horror sci-fi stuff mixed in, but I'm going to miss it. I'm disappointed that we're not going to get more of it, just not because I don't feel like the story's been told and it hasn't been done satisfactorily, but it's really good television. So, I'm looking forward to seeing how they wrap it up on August 1st.
Cool. All right. Jaime, what do you got?
We got a couple here. One is a comic from Saturday Morning Breakfast Cereal, which addresses what is the truth behind Superman's weakness to kryptonite. We'll have that in the show notes for those of you transporting at home. I don't want to reveal too much on that. It's a quick hit. Sort of the longer one that I have as a pick is Steve Shive's channel. He does the Trek Actually videos. I think that was a pick of the week. You know, some number of episodes ago where I did I chose the Captain Jellico was a pretty okay guy from Star Trek The Next Generation one that he did. And he's done a more recent one on why Geordi LaForge deserved better. In particular, in his the way the writers addressed his relationship to Leah Brahms. Mm. And I guess semi-spoilers, it also covers the, hey, you know what, Leah Brahms sort of deserved a little bit better too than we got out of the characters in these particular episodes. Mm. So I love his analysis. That agree or not, I think he follows these pretty thoughtfully and says like a lot of things. You're like, hey, wait a minute, that's right, that is what happened in that episode. Yeah. Let's analyze that a little further.
Yeah, I always felt like he did get the short shrift. Geordi's love life over the course of those seven seasons is really quite tragic. What about we're going to go see tomorrow?
Oh, well, I'm going to go see some Hollywood movie tomorrow. Really long title in Hollywood movie.
Once
Upon a Time in Hollywood. Starring Charles Manson and Sharon Tate.
Yes.
Which, of course, I'm familiar with that story. Are you familiar with that story, too?
Yeah, absolutely. I read the book.
Yeah. Oh, did you? Okay. Well, there you go.
I'm curious to see. You know, we talked about this. You know, you and I have been back and forth on Messenger this week talking about going, and of course, now we're going. Mm-hmm. It was with this sort of stunning realization that it hit me as, you know, Tarantino has always said he only intends to do 10 movies, and this is movie number 9. And
really?
That's what sort of hit me when, you know, we were talking about, oh, should we make an effort? Should we go? And I thought, you know what? I want to see this movie in the theater because he's a great filmmaker. Like his last couple of movies, Hateful Eight was a really, really interesting cinematic movie. It's beautifully shot. lot. And it made me think, like, this is kind of a, you know, this isn't going to last forever, you know? Quentin Tarantino is a modern master, and if he's only going to make a couple more movies, you kind of want to make an effort to go see these things.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, of course, in the back of my brain, I think, yes, clearly it won't last forever because human mortality. I did not realize that Tarantino had, like, a spawn timer that was going down.
Oh, yeah.
And counting down, like, every time he makes use of his powers, it diminishes him.
Well, because they were talking about that in relation to the idea of him doing a Star Trek movie, which is something we've talked about in the past, and he's still openly talking about as a possibility. He said actually just last week, he said, if I do that Star Trek movie, for the record, that's my last movie. And that's a really weird possibility too.
What?
Yeah. So, whoa. I mean, we're looking at, this could be, and this is, if you think about sort of the eras of his work, if you look at Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, and Jackie Brown as sort of one era of his career, and then you look at Kill Bill 1, Kill Bill 2, and Death Proof as a second phase of his career, where he was doing sort of the homage to the different genres there. And then you look at the third phase, which is Inglourious Basterds, Django, Hateful Eight, and this. They're all historical reimagining, or historical fiction reimagined. Those are sort of the three arcs of his career. It'll be interesting to see how he chooses his last film. Does he stay with this most recent arc of his career? Does he go a completely different direction and do something like Star Trek? But it's either way, it's kind of a weird notion to think that if he keeps true to this thing that he's been saying for many years, this has always been his intention, is to just do these 10 memorable movies and walk away. I don't know. It's a weird thing to come around to.
Yeah, that seems kind of weird.
Especially because he's not an older man.
No, I was going to say, he's not like
he's in his 50s, I think.
Yeah, yeah. That is odd.
Yeah.
It's kind of an odd proclamation to make in any case, right? So.
Well, and again, who's to say that he can't, you know, change his mind? Kevin Smith said he was retired several years ago, that he was just going to focus on podcasting and never make another movie. Okay, guess what?
And
He's made like three movies, and one of them is about to hit in October. So
yeah,
I guess we all have the prerogative to change our mind. But either way, I think it's worth going and seeing this movie. He makes great films. They look great. He is clearly, you know, a very special filmmaker. And I think, like, going and seeing some other directors that are of that ilk, you got to see their work in the best possible way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, for sure. So I guess that's it. So hey, Jaime, if people want to get in touch with you, where would they find you?
I'm on Twitter as @devwithahair.
All right. And Jonathan, if people want to find you somewhere?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram as @JPKNews.
All right. And my name is Timitra, TIMMITRA is where you'll find me on the Twitter machine with that handle. I will be speaking at SwiftTO in August. So if you're a techie and you go to that kind of thing, check me out. I will be there. Jaime, are you speaking anywhere coming up soon?
I will be speaking at iOS Dev UK. Ooh. In Aberystwyth, Wales. That is coming up in first week of September. Sorry, I had to think. I was like, Labor Day. What day is Labor Day? 9/2 to 9/5, I want to say. I'd have to look. But yeah, I'll be giving a talk there.
Cool. All righty. Well, until that next time, we'll see you guys in the future. Bye.
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 If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the SpockCast website at SpockCast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at SpockCast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskSpockCast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/SpockCast. You can find details on how to help us out on our website at spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
Now you two bastards. Now I have to go find a place to have a talk. Jeez.
What?
So now I need a place to go have a talk.
Talk?
Like a panel at like Comic-Con or something. Yeah. Like a Toronto Comic-Con or something.
That's too bad.
Yeah. It's been so long that this Raptors are NBA champs seems like really old news because now Kawhi Leonard is like with the Clippers and Steve Ballmer.
Hey, did we win the championship? I forget.
You did. And I definitely pro giving you guys props. I don't have any skin in the game. So I'm totally fine with that. I was just like, oh my gosh, it's been long enough that I kind of forgot that fact.
Well, I'm just putting that there because that's going to be there on every episode. I'm going to remember to remind everybody every episode going forward until they inevitably get wiped out next year. So
until they lose and it can no longer continue.
That's
they
right.
They're still the champs.
That's
right?
Exactly yeah. right. Well, that was actually one of the funniest things that happened to us here in Toronto because the Blue Jays won the World Series in 1992 and 93, and 94 was a lockout. So they were the champions for 3 years because there was no champion in 1994. So they carried the championship from October of 1992 and were the champions straight through until October of 1995, even though they only won two titles.
Oh, because of the lockout.
The lockout. Right. They held the title and there was no other champion in the meantime.
They were just
that's good. A good like Jeopardy question. Like this team, you know, has more years than they have actual title
exactly.
wins. You know, it's like what? It's like who the heck is that?
Yeah,
nobody will get it. Nobody will get it.
Yeah,
unless Jonathan's on the show.
Yes. Nobody ever does. See, that would be an advantage if you had an idea of what the breakdown was going to be, mm-hmm. because. You know, people always do the geography stuff. They always do the literacy stuff. Literature.
Yeah.
They never, ever want to touch sports and they never, ever want to touch science. So if you think that there's a chance there of getting a sports or a science one, like you go in and you bet big on those.
Yep. Pray for that daily double.
Right.